Josh and Frankie.
What a couple of dumb shits.
Hello, primates! You found Primus Tracks. Congratulations. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at Primus Tracks. PrimusTracksPod@gmail.com is the email address. And, of course, there is a wonderful Primus Tracks Facebook page maintained by the man who lives on the 63rd floor of Primus Tracks Towers. He is the human embodiment of all of our childlike awe and wonder at all things Primus. It's Frankie.
Hi, Josh.
How are you on this day, Frankie?
I'm doing great, and you?
I'm doing all right. I know that we're talking about a track called The Last Salmon Man today, so it seems like there's an air of finality and tragedy to the proceedings, but I'm remarkably upbeat.
I gotta say, this is not related to The Last Salmon Man, but I'm really amazed at the incredibly positive reaction that your t-shirt designs have. Except for a couple of comments, I think everybody was down with the ideas.
Yes, those will never be t-shirts. Those were just stupid ideas I had and thought it'd be funny to throw them out there. And that is as far as those will go. So don't start saving up your money for a Herve t-shirt, which I think might have been the favorite. But we'll... Someday we'll get our act together and do something silly for you guys. I'm glad they were received positively because I had absolutely no artistic endeavor within that. It was just, I'm going to throw this out there and see what happens. Thanks, everybody. As we do just about every episode before talking about the track itself, we have business to take care of, Frankie. First, we have a couple of entrants into the Punch Bowl. You have at least two ways to get into the Punch Bowl, primates. One, of course, is to leave a five-star review on Apple Podcast. Say whatever you want. I'll read it here. The other way, if you don't use Apple Podcast, and I don't, so I don't know how I would get a five-star review to myself. How about this? Use Instagram or Twitter and send us a DM or tag us in a post with your five-star review, and I'll read it here. Sound good? Sure. I've got one of each, Frankie.
Tell me, please.
Our first five-star review is from Apple Podcast. Username Liquor Store Pony says, "Sweet!" I don't always agree with them, but it is just a matter of opinion. It makes me explore Primus with new perspective. They should have titled it Short and Sweet, because that was right to the point. You know what? I appreciate that they went out and said they don't agree with us on things, because we're not gospel truth here. So it's really great that people disagree with us. Yeah, but they don't just end with, I disagree. And they're jerks. It makes me explore Primus with a new perspective. And that's what I like hearing when people message us or leave reviews. It gets us thinking in another direction as well. Or a perspective we may not have considered before. So that's really important to me. So thank you, Liquor Store Pony. Frankie, our other five-star review comes from Instagram. And this is from Edwin Allen Richards IV.
My God.
I know, some kind of land baron. I feel a little underdressed. This is great. Edwin says, if I used Apple Podcasts, I'd rate you 5 stars. And he says, I'm late to the game here. Can't tell you how much I appreciate the podcast. It's truly amazing feeling so connected to this community. I knew it was large, but hadn't realized it was so devoted. Edwin only messaged us a few days ago, Frankie, and he says, currently, I'm listening through all the episodes in order and have made it to Is It Luck? Frankie had an anecdote about Les getting hit with a projectile on stage and responding very politely while telling them to shove it up their ass. I don't remember that. I'm sure you mentioned it. Frankie didn't remember which show that was from. So we're going all the way back to our Is It Luck episode. And Edwin says, I believe I was at this show and it was Rothbury in Michigan, July 4th, 2008. And the projectile was a glow stick.
Wow.
There you go.
There's something about that track, because the same thing happened at one of the Mexico City shows in 2013. They had to cancel Is It Luck because somebody throwing stuff on stage.
What is up with that song and people getting so riled up? Yeah, Edwin continues, if I remember, he was so polite because he prefaced it by saying something along the lines of, since this is a holiday, I won't say what I want to say to you because what I want to say to you is, and then he proceeds to eloquently tell them to shove it up their ass. So thank you for that, Edwin. You helped us solve a mystery from way back, a mystery I didn't even remember existed. Thank you, Edwin, for your 5-star review via Instagram. Speaking of things you can do, you can also support the podcast by throwing down some dollars, pesos, rupees, whatever you have, euros. I don't know what you guys purchase goods and services with. However, I've got a good for you, and it's stickers designed by Frankie. DM us on Instagram or Twitter for more information, or primustrackspod@gmail.com, which is also our PayPal email address. I've got a stack of stickers. I'm looking at it right now. We'd love to get them into your hands. In thanks for your support for the podcast in perpetuity. I want to leave this up for years. I want it to be an archaeological find to some kind of music historian 200 years from now, Frankie.
Absolutely. Please buy some, guys. You're going to love them. And remember, if you get them and you affix them to any surface, make sure to take a picture and we'll share it in our socials proudly.
Absolutely. Put it among your collection of your greatest stickers, because this is these are great Frankie designs. Thanks for supporting the pod. Couple pieces of miscellaneous debris, too, Frankie. Jeez, we have a really busy preface today. First of all, not a lot of people know this, but Mr. Larry Lalonde, Lur himself, has an artist series pedal from Keeley Electronics, and it's already sold out. I was lucky enough to be tipped off to that, and I was able to pick one up before they ran out. I have a really nice Larry Lalonde signature pedal over there, Frankie, next to my electric guitar, which I got out for the first time in about 4 years, and I plunked around on it last night. It's got everything. As our friend Anthony, who will be with us next week for the next episode, said, it's basically Primus in a pedal. And as I was mixing around with knobs and pressing buttons, I realized he was right. You might actually hear me playing some Primus licks through that thing at some point. We also have a piece of miscellaneous debris from Luke in Santa Rosa, who's following up on Hennepin Crawler, Frankie.
Cool.
He said, quick follow-up note regarding your episode on the track Hennepin Crawler. Luke from Le Special mentioned that he wondered if Les had ever experienced some kind of life-changing cruise on the device that inspired the song. Although Luke and Frankie both mentioned the vehicle's prominence at Burning Man, I thought I'd add that for a few years in the late aughts, there was an event in Santa Rosa called the Great Handcar Regatta. This event involved racing custom-built, rail-based vehicles down an unused stretch of train track in downtown Santa Rosa. It also doubled as a costume event with a heavy steampunk theme. It was popular while it lasted, drawing over 10,000 people at its peak. Les Claypool emceed the event in 2009. Rumor is Tom Waits was there, too. And among the vehicles that year, the Hennepin Crawler was prominently featured. I could certainly be wrong, but I've always suspected it was this event, in particular, that inspired the song. Thank you, Luke from Santa Rosa.
That's fascinating. That's a fascinating piece of history. Thank you very much for that. And I agree with you. That very well could have been a key event in the creation of the song.
I'm drawing a direct line on my conspiracy map on the wall. It has to be the inspiration. So thanks, Luke from Santa Rosa. Of course, we don't have all the information, so it's really great when you guys write in and help us out with those key details. That's miscellaneous debris. Today we're talking about Last Salmon Man, track 3 from Green Naugahyde. It clocks in at a breezy 6 minutes and 15 seconds. But as we always do, before we talk about the track itself, we have live history. And boy, this one has one.
That's right, Josh. The Last Salmon Man premiered on December 30th, 2010, at the Fox Theater in Oakland. In the beginning, The Last Salmon Man used to be performed on the dobro bass, and it was later adapted to pachyderm bass, which I think was a really wise move, because in my opinion, it gave the track much more power. The middle section instantly became a jam vehicle for the performances throughout its live incarnations. Many times during the live performances, Les introduced the track as a song about the waning salmon fishery in Northern California. Mm-hmm. We'll go into detail about that in a moment. What also has to be pointed out about the live history of The Last Salmon Man is that since its premiere up until now, 2010 all the way to 2022, The Last Salmon Man has never been omitted from any Primus tour. It's remained in constant rotation. It's quite a certainty during the live settings. And you can pretty much tell that Liz has a great time playing this track. Not only, I mean, it's really interesting that not only was it premiered before the Guinea Pig tour or the rest of the album, but it's also one of the songs that survived after a Greenogahyde, the Greenogahyde cycle was done. We know that many songs never came back, but The Last Elmo Man has stuck around.
And not just stuck around, but to the tune of, at least as of this recording, 267 performances.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd call that a mainstay. Those numbers, of course, courtesy of Toasterland.
And so it's, what do you think, Josh, about the switch from Dobro to Pachyderm?
Yeah, that was really early on. I remember that. I don't know if it was a subject of controversy or anything of that nature in the fandom, but I do remember that the Dobro was pretty prominent at that point, and it wasn't appreciated, I think, in some circles. So when he switched to the Pachyderm, I do think it, of course, that Dobro has a specific sound, and I wouldn't call it a full sound. So when he switched it to more of a standard four-string bass, it had a fuller sound, and I think it benefits the tune itself. So that's where I land on it. I think it's a great standard four-string. And, you know, Les is still performing it, so I think he likes it that way as well. And I want to go back to that number, 267 performances, Frankie. To me, that's a staggering number for a track that's, air quotes, only 11 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it's has never been omitted from a tour ever since it made its debut, which means it's, you know, in Les's head, and it's always there, so he can pluck that and put it right into the set list any night he wants to. And we know, of course, not all numbers, especially I'd say from about 1995 on back, are extremely accurate as far as track counts. But from what we know, Last Salmon Man has more live performances than tracks like Bob, Mr. Know-It-All, Over the Electric Grapevine, which is hard to believe. But it's got to be pretty close, because I know we're missing a lot of shows for those tracks, but that means it's up there.
And I think the fan reaction is pretty warm to the song, right? People have a good time with this track live.
It's a bouncer. Yeah, it's got that J Lane hop to it, so you can just bounce along. It's not going to start a mosh pit, but it gets people moving. And it does actually have a wide range of Primus influences / performances in it, with the trippy middle section, a little trip to Lurland. It's got just about everything, actually, Frankie, and I'm pretty excited to talk about it.
We'll go into that in detail. Can I share with you, Josh, some quotes from Les Claypool himself?
I guess. I don't know how reliable he is, but we'll try.
All right. So I have two very in-depth quotes regarding the song. The first one reads as follows. I have a handful of friends who are commercial fishermen. It has always been hard for them. It's not like fishermen get rich. But now they're going the way of the lumberjack. When you've got 125 golf courses down in the desert in Palm Springs, and there's water being diverted there from the north, it's going to affect the fish populations. I've always been outspoken about that notion of sacrificing one industry, one legacy for another that just happens to have a lot of money around it. I mean, I like hanging out on the golf course, but this seems a little ridiculous. And the other quote reads as follows. Some parents take their kids to football games or baseball games. My dad didn't do that. We would go fishing with my uncles. That's what we did. There were a lot of auto mechanics in my family. We'd either be working on some vehicle or working around the house or out on the ocean, in the bay, fishing. A lot of my friends are contractors and fishermen, so I've watched and I've stated for years my perspective on what's going on with water diversion in the state of California, how it's affecting the fisheries. The Last Salmon Man is my response to the fisheries being shut down for the previous 3 years prior to 2010 and the waning salmon fishing industry in Northern California. So I believe these two quotes, Josh, shed a lot of light regarding the song.
Yeah, I mean, given that those quotes, I mean, we could just talk about the lyrics to start and then work our way back to the music. There is no set in stone order of things, Frankie, so why not? And I'm glad you brought those up because, you know, I went to those subjects myself as I was reading over the lyrics. And to me, these are bread and butter lyrics. It's telling a story through characters, and that they're at the mercy of other powers. You know, this the McDonagall clan here. By the way, for about the first 3 months of listening to this song back in 2010, I really was hoping that he was saying McGarnagle, Simpsons reference, but he wasn't. He was saying McDonagall. So there's this fictional family, and in this case, the commercial Chinook fishermen are dealing with water diversion projects, as you mentioned there. And of course, they're negatively impacting salmon migration and reproduction. And of course, that's affecting the livelihoods of these fishermen. And as less so aptly stated, fishermen don't get rich. But we know what type of people are greasing the palms in order to get water diversion projects approved for their golf courses, you know? I would say the heart of this is Jimmy, of course, being torn by one, on the one hand, crushing debt thanks to those closed fishing seasons. And then on the other hand, this family obligation, because he promised his dad that he'd stay on Bodega Bay. So this is definitely something near and dear to Les's heart.
I love that part of the lyrics. The vocal delivery is just fantastic.
Yeah, and it really creates drama. So we have this really, really nice drama brewing here. And, you know, we get these little slices in a track like American Life as far as the lyrics go. And this, to me, is like an expanded version of that, because this is the American life of an American commercial fisherman, especially a small-time one in some part of America. So, and what I really appreciate about the lyrics is there's no outright statement of right and wrong, but we can certainly read between the lines. And of course, the interview that you quoted sheds more light on it than we can. I really appreciate that he says in the lyrics themselves, he says, the northern water that sloshes desert fairways fulfills SoCal golfers' needs. Okay, now needs, he's using it for the rhyme because he's rhyming it with seeds, because the river waters are also going to nurture Central Valley seeds. So there's some agricultural concerns here, but there's also these golf courses. And I think he's using the word needs facetiously, but it also serves the rhyme, because we know that golf is not a need, right?
It's very clever.
Yeah.
Very clever lyrics.
Yeah, it's a want, but the rest of that doesn't need to be said. We know just from this that where he stands on this, and that it is more than a little ridiculous that this water that's not just impacting people's livelihoods, but it's impacting the ecological health of that place is being diverted elsewhere for things like golf courses. I think these are some of Les's stronger lyrics.
Absolutely.
Terms of,
yeah. And I want to point out, Josh, that regardless of the music and the lyrics, even before I heard the song, mm-hmm. I remember feeling so excited about the Fisherman Chronicles being continued.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Such an amazing tradition in the Primus folklore.
Yeah, and when you look at your media, though, I'm looking at my Green Naugahyde CD, and I busted out the vinyl, too. There's no parenthetical Fisherman Chronicles Volume 4 printed on the release. However, we have seen it printed on some information on the internet, but also Les has verbally confirmed that this is part 4, I think, in a live setting.
He has. Yes, he has.
Yeah. So,
and I cannot quote the specific places right now, but I do recall looking at some early track lists shared on different websites where Fisherman Chronicles was noted in parentheses.
Right, yeah, so there, there is some discrepancy here and there, but it's absolutely part 4. And he really goes into some detail. And once again, you know, he's writing a song, he's writing lyrics about what he knows, and that's really important to him. And this is something he knows like the back of his hand. So we are getting, I wouldn't say we're getting a master class, but we're definitely getting an informed opinion on this issue. And because he's seen it firsthand, he's seen a lot of his friends affected by this change over time. Now, he does mention Chinook salmon in particular. Frankie, do you know much about Chinook?
No, please tell me.
I would imagine, given the circumstance of your geography, that Chinook don't make their way into Mexico City very often. And I mean, other than like in a freezer truck. Out here on the west coast of the United States and in Oregon, they're pretty common. It's a big issue here, too, in Oregon State as well as in California. I actually know through my sister-in-law, I've actually been to a place where there's this guy who is on a particular river, and he sits in this cabin all day, most of the year, Frankie, and he is there to watch and observe as the salmon are spawning, and he's also there to make sure that no other humans get in the way and become a nuisance and, you know, disrupt the spawning process, because these salmon in this river, it's a very fragile ecosystem, and he wants to make absolutely certain that nothing happens to them.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, there's a lot of conservation going on, and there's a lot of controversy going on, especially in California, Oregon, Western United States, around preserving salmon species, among other species, using nature to serve human wants or needs in terms of water. So, but Chinook themselves, they're remarkably particular in their parameters as far as spawning. The water level has to be just right. The quote-unquote cleanliness of the water has to be just right, meaning it has to be fairly free of sediment. It's got to be pretty clear water. The water temperature has to be just right, and they have to be cool temperatures. And it really helps if the river has a very, in which they're spawning, has a very healthy riparian zone. You know, lots of vegetation and shade and stuff that might drop into the river to give cover to those baby salmon. So when those salmon mature and they're ready to work their way up the rivers to spawn and then die, which has always been a strange thing to me, you know, when you divert water from rivers, that naturally changes all the conditions that were more or less constant for, I don't know, millennia. So up here in Oregon, dams are a big issue because, of course, they keep fish from migrating, particularly salmon. So salmon ladders have been built and those kind of things to allow the salmon to bypass the dams. But there's been a growing movement to remove dams so that it's more of a natural thing for them. And it goes back, you know, takes the river back to the way it was, and then restoring after removing the dams. But of course, the agriculture industry, hydroelectric industry, they are against those sort of things. So all this is up for debate. But it's the same root issue, and that, of course, is humans wanting to use water for their own endless pursuits. On the other hand, wildlife, the food web, vegetation suffers as a result, or can suffer as a result. So
this is a deep episode.
This is deep, and I'm not going to stand here and proselytize to you one way or another. But it is it's a big deal where I live, and it's definitely a big deal in Les's life too, down there in Northern California. I say down there, it's just a few hours from here. So, but we do know, actually, Les did play a benefit show for a guy who lost his fishing boat on Bodega Bay back in 2013, right?
Yes.
And you pointed to it. You know, he's an avid fisherman, but he definitely shows a conservationist streak. Think about Mr. Crinkle, you know, damning the sons of bitches with their gill nets set afloat. Think about Pudding Time, all the striped bass are dying, but you're going to get your brand new bike. But I would think any logically thinking sportsmen would want to be some kind of conservationist, because if you hunt and kill everything or fish and remove everything from the water, there's nothing left to catch.
Absolutely.
And then your hobby's dead. That's boring. Then you got to go start a podcast about a band you like. So, you know, save the fish, save the bears, save the whales, save whoever. I just don't need any competition here, Frankie. That's what I'm trying to say to everybody. It's a complicated issue, but we're seeing one perspective of it, and it's coming from the perspective of the people who are probably affected the most by it, and that's your commercial fishermen who are, you know, operating some kind of family concern. And I think it's beautifully written. I think these lyrics are phenomenal in that regard. Like I said, I think they're some of his strongest. Whew. Man, I really did. I really threw that out there for you. Sorry, Frankie, you're going to be a Chinook expert after this one.
Just another example in the Primus catalog of how amazing a songwriter Les can be and how underrated he is in that aspect.
Right. You know, I'm going to point to a couple of lines. You know, Jimmy watched as the bulk of the fleet sold their boats and moved away. But after the stroke, he promised to his father he'd do his best to stay in Bodega Bay. So there's, first of all, internal rhyme, which I love, stay in Bodega Bay. But also, It's one of those things when you mention it in passing, but after the stroke, he promised to his father. Well, that's a whole story in and of itself in one line. Okay, so he's given us a whole lot with a little bit, and I think that's a hallmark of strong writing. And then during the quasi-reggae part, he remembered the days when... And so I should preface this by saying Jimmy's in this situation, but he's thinking back to when he was a kid, right? He remembered the days when his father used to show him how to set and tend all the gear. There was also... this sense of doom. With his hand on his shoulder, he looked out at the waters and said, "Son, it is my fear that you'll be the last Salmon Man." So, wow. There's some really great stuff going on there. It kind of is high drama for the American blue-collar fishermen. Actually, before we talk about the music, Frankie, Green Nog Hide is unique to the Primus catalog in that, well, first of all, it's a record with J Lane, obviously, but it's the first record in which songwriting is attributed to individuals as opposed to the collective. Did you notice that in your liner notes? Because up to this point, it was always music by Primus, every single album. But now that gives way to tracks like Prelude to a Crawl that says music by Claypool, Hennepin Crawler, music by Claypool, Lalonde, Lane, and Last Salmon Man, music by Claypool. That's what we're up to so far. So we're getting those individual attributions. And I do remember Les saying on the lead up to Green Nog Hide, he said to Larry and Jay, he said, "You guys got to bring some stuff in." It truly became a collaborative process, but they also brought in their own things, such as Salmon Man, which Les must have had laying around to put to the record. So it's not just music by Primus, which is new and strange to me, even now thinking about it. So, but the music itself, I think I talked about this with Follow the Fool. I talked about, when we talked about Conspiranoid, I talked about that bass line was kind of a default Les Claypool thing. But this track, while it is to me a very complete track that was definitely worked out before the recording, also seems like a default Les Claypool bass line. And that's not a bad thing, you know, if you compare it to something like How Here Come the Bastard Sound or any of those other ones where he's got that strum going. There's nothing wrong with it. But it just sounds like Les Claypool, and that's great. But when I talk about it being a complete track, I'm just going to play the first 22 seconds, and I think you'll know what I'm talking about here. Boom, and we're into it. It only takes 20 seconds. So in those first 20 seconds, they show us the forthcoming structure of the song. They show us some of the dynamics that we're going to be experiencing. But then later, we get even more parts. They surprise us with that pseudo-reggae pre-chorus. And of course, we get a guitar solo, and then we get a trippy breakdown after that. So at 6 minutes and 15 seconds, you know, whereas some Primus tracks that are about 2.5 minutes overstay their welcome, this one, to me, it's a pretty strong 6 minutes.
I want to point out that I absolutely love the production on this record, and that clip you played is case in point. I just really love the sound. I mean, we were discussing with Hennepin Crawler how it's not played note by note, right? Mm-hmm. In a live setting. Well, it was not played. In the case of the other songs, I think they did a pretty great job replicating them in a live setting. But, I mean, the sound they got in the studio recording is truly unique.
And I mentioned to Luke last week, I kind of have my issues with the production on this record, but it is a pretty good sounding track to me, too. I feel like it needs to be, especially the drums need to be pushed to the front a bit more. I think I want to support that by showing you guys. Showing you on a podcast. By playing for you via YouTube, there's actually Tim Alexander demoing this track at a drum clinic from 2015. The sound on his drums, of course, it's just his drums, and he's playing along to the track. But somebody in the audience recorded this, and the sound on the drums is phenomenal to me. And I'm just going to play a little bit. Now, Tim doesn't play it note for note. There's some things that he leaves out in a live setting, but also in this clinic. But just listen to the sound quality of the drums and imagine this being on the Green Nog Hide recording. Obviously not the greatest recording, but those drums are just loud and clear to me, and I'd love to hear that. And then you get that, of course, in the live setting.
This is also another interesting debate. How the song was performed by J-Lane and how it's played by Herff.
Oh, of course, yeah. The two completely different drummers in style and approach. And actually, before he goes into the tune, in this video, Herb talks about Jay's the J-Ski hop, and he talks about how he's more of the gorilla, and he gives a demo on that, moving comically back and forth. You got to check out this video. It's pretty great. And he says it's a tough one, but he says it's a pretty cool song. So he's... You know, he's playing it in a Tim Alexander, of course, through the Tim Alexander lens, because he's Tim Alexander, but he's playing this J-Lane part pretty darn well. But it's interesting to watch this video and listen really closely, because you hear some of the embellishments that Jay does on the record that Tim isn't replicating. And that's interesting. You know, it's probably a creative choice, but it could also be a stylistic choice. But boy, I just love the sound of the drums on that video. And I thought, man... I really feel like they could have pushed Jay a little, or widened, opened it a little bit for Jay as far as the drums go. But I think that's a minor complaint at this point. I will say Jay is magic on this track, especially that part I just played where we go to Lurland. He is just killing it. And I have a question for you, Frankie. Did we ever find out who the for that second? I think it's the second in Bodega Bay. It sounds like a group of kids. Yes. Really enthusiastically saying that. Do we ever figure out who those kids are?
I never figure it out. In fact, I never thought about it, about that mini chorus as a group of kids. I just thought it was Les layering his vocals in the studio.
Oh, man. Yeah, it sounds like a bunch of kids to me. And I would assume he just went down to his kids' school or a local maybe a local elementary school and said, okay, you're going to say this on 1, 2, 3, go. Good. Okay, now I'm going to press record. Do it again. And then just brought it back and shoved it into the recording. Because it does sound like a bunch of little kids in chorus doing that. So it's a funny little thing to drop into this recording. It's not something that Primus usually did at that point. Other than, of course, when they bought a boatload of Warner Brothers sound effects CDs and had to use those, you know, to justify the purchase. So... that's an interesting little thing too. But this song has a lot of parts. I mean, it kind of starts with A, B, A, B. We get our In Bodega Bay, and then we get our C part with the reggae, with the one drop beat that Luke was telling us about last week. So it's not your standard with a standard rock beat. You're getting the bass, and Jay's playing along the rim of the snare, and you're mostly getting your ones and threes or twos and fours. I didn't really count it out. But then we get into a D part. We get in an E part for the solo. So Les drops down on his register to make space for Larry. Jay's killing it. And I got to say that guitar solo is my favorite part. And I think why that is Larry starts by reprising the main lick at the front of the solo and a portion of it at the back of the solo. So he's bookending it really in a satisfying way to me. We get an F part with Les looping his bass and doing a solo type thing of his own. And then we're back to the B, A, C, all these different parts over the 6 minutes. So it's pretty satisfying to me, all these different parts. I don't have a lot I want to play from it, but it is a really satisfying tune.
In fact, Josh, I mean, yeah, the Lur solo is fantastic, but this is actually one of the reasons that I enjoy hearing the song in a live setting, is what Les is doing with his bass in that bridge with the guitar solo. It's like, you know, it's like he's galloping along on the bass. It's really powerful and sounds really great live.
Yeah, I think all three musicians are playing to their strengths there during that solo portion. So, but yeah, this time I'm going to listen to Les's bass more closely while Lur's going crazy. There it is, yeah.
It's fantastic, right? Yeah.
And then he moves up a step or two and gives us more of that under the solo there. It is fantastic. And he's giving Larry the space by moving down a register. So the bass can be pretty busy during a solo. That's fine. because they're in different sonic frequencies. Yeah, that is a really satisfying part. And that, I think, is in a live setting is where the crowd really gets moving. This has this tune has a lot of dynamics to it, too. It's not just one note, one register, which happens from time to time. They're a bit more dynamic. And I think I really appreciate this one more than I thought coming into it. Now, I know off air, I'm not outing you or anything. You said it's not your favorite. But for me, I'd call it above. I'd say it's an above average Primus track for me.
It's not my favorite on the record, but I rate it as a pretty exceptional Primus song. Just in the context of Greenalga High, there are songs I enjoy a lot more, but I do appreciate Salmon Man a lot.
Yeah. For me, I think it's this combination of the lyrics, which we lauded to no end there. And with that, with the music being, it's definitely not one of those mid-range clunkers that just kind of plods along. It's a little more upbeat and it stays that way. I don't think the tempo changes at all throughout the tune, but it's a bit more up-tempo. Not as much as Hennepin Crawler, but it's keeping things moving, and I think that's really important to this tune. Well, we've talked about live performances enough, and I know you have a few, Frankie, so why don't we listen to some?
All right, Josh, what's first in line?
First in line, from the list you emailed me, to pull back the curtain a little bit, here's how this works. Frankie emails me a list. He gives me time codes. I download the tracks. I put them in my software to play them. And then I forget to cue them up. And I have to spend a bunch of time clicking. But our first one comes from Summer Camp 2014.
Summer Camp 2014. Excellent quality recording. Let's play a little of the intro, Josh, to see, well, to remind our listeners what it's like to hear The Last Salmon Man in a live setting.
And by this point, we're on a four string, right?
That's right.
All right. Into it. There's that bullet mic. And this is 2014, so that's Tim Alexander behind the drums, right?
That's right. What do you think?
Sounds pretty good, and I think the tempo is just a titch faster than it is on the record, although I could be wrong about that. But that is a nice sounded recording, and they just go right into it. And, you know, sometimes they'll draw out the intros to some of the tracks, but this one, they're all business. And that's interesting that this one, they pretty much play it straight. I'm looking at the lengths of these tracks. They're a little bit longer in a live setting, so they will jam out the middle a bit here and there, it seems.
What is the other portion we're going to highlight, Josh? It's probably the guitar solo.
Let's find out. You're right. There it is. Yeah, that's the part where the crowd gets to bop along because of the dynamics there. And
yeah, did you notice how great the bass sounds in that part?
It does. It sounds really low end and it's full. That's that full sound I was talking about with your standard four string over the dobro. It's not as clanky. It sounds great. And Tim, I think that's the part where Tim can really shine too, because he's going to that ride and we know how he can work that cymbal. And he gets to play it more straight ahead there. Man, that's a good one. I was not there. I can tell you that. I kind of wish I had been. Here's another show I wasn't at, Frankie. This is our next one is Stubbs in Austin, Texas in 2011.
Another fantastic recording.
And your note says the bass part. Ooh. Well, there's a lot of bass parts, so let's find out which one you're talking about.
Some feels, probably.
He's got the effects on there. He can recreate it live. yeah. Oh, yeah. Largely sticking with what he played on the record, but it sounds really good there.
He always has these interesting bass fills and little improvs during the live versions. So it's something to look forward to after the amazing guitar part. So thinking about that, it's really cool to listen to The Last Salmon Man in a live setting because you have two things to look forward to, lure length and the improvs.
Yeah. And that, I don't know, would you call it less land or is that too derivative? What would we call that?
Oh my God, good question.
Should we just call it the Claypoolian section?
I'm on board with that.
Ah, yes, we're getting Claypoolian here. Okay, I can do that. Yes, you have to say it with your pinky extended, of course, but it sounds pretty good. That one sounded good there in Austin in 2011. And of course, if you couldn't tell by that wonderful hi-hat work or the year, that was Jay on drums, sounded great too. Boy, they were really, really feeling it in 2011 and 12 with Jay for sure. Our last one, I believe this is the Sydney, Australia show from 2011 that the Mosh Cam is on. Is that right?
Mosh Cam, that's right.
So this one, your time codes indicate a cool bridge. And then Lurland, as well as some Jay Fills. Oh, the Mosh Cam show turns up on suggested Primus videos for me all the time. So I will say, if you guys haven't seen it, it'll be suggested to you. It's right there. And it's really nice footage of them playing down under. So check that one out if you haven't already. You know, when I first read this, Frankie, I read Cool Bridge. I thought you had attached a picture of an actual cool bridge, but it wasn't there.
The days when his father used to show
him. Oh, going operatic.
And set all the gear. With his hand on his shoulder, he looked down through the water. He said, son, it is my fear
that you'll be the last Salmon Man.
I love how he drops back down.
You're the last Salmon Man. You're the last Salmon Man.
Lur sounds a little bit more distorted. Sure. Solo's coming. I like that. That sounds great. That's a really good audio recording too. And I, if I recall correctly, on the Mosh Cam, the person holding the Mosh Cam is getting jostled quite a bit during this part of the song, as the crowd gets bouncy. I like that one. Yeah, why don't we check out some Jay Fills from that one too? Because Jay deserves all the praise in the world for this track because he really keeps it bouncing. Do you think Jay Lane was bullied by a hi-hat in high school, and that's why he just kicks the shit out of him every show, every night, for decades? That is phenomenal.
So after listening to these cuts, Josh, what's the keeper for you? The Last Salmon Man with Tim Alexander or with Jay Lane?
You know, it's tough because I don't know all the intricacies that go into these tracks. I can hear them. I don't know that I could elaborate upon them. But what I can tell you, Frankie, is, you know, of course, it's originally a Jay composition. So I really think that's what I'm going to gravitate to. Although, you know, hearing it live with Jay and also hearing it live with Tim in the live setting, I'm not sitting there going, no, he missed that 16th note. But Tim really drives it, too. And it sounds great live. between the two of those guys. But I will say catching up with Jay, I think, made it was a little more special to me, I suppose, because looking back, you know, I saw a bunch of shows with Jay, but his run was fairly short, actually. So I'm looking at it through a lens where, well, Jay wasn't around very long for those live shows, so I hold them in my heart. You got to, I think you got a bunch of shows with Jay, right?
Yes, I got, my first Primus shows were actually with Jay Lane, and I remember them very fondly.
Oh, was that three-night run?
Yes.
Okay,
and
yeah.
For me, it was also an absolute treat to see him with Sausage.
That's right. We were there. Ha, ha, ha. Man. I have a feeling there's going to be a hashtag like Jay Lane fan club or something as we talk more about this record, because Jay really does bring it. So drummer guys, come out and talk about it. I want to know more about what makes Jay so great. Really nice tracks there. I do appreciate this one. It's funny because when I look at the set list, I go, oh, they played Salmon again. But when I'm at the show and they play it, thumbs up. I'm into it. All told, I would say above average, solid track, really carried by the lyrics, but it is a more dynamic track than it probably is at first glance. So two thumbs up from me on Last Salmon Man. Last Salmon Man, put your boat in dry dock, because you've been tracked. Next time, Frankie, check the tags on your merchandise.
I will, Josh. I have a feeling I'm going to like it. Probably I'm going to buy it.
Nicely done. Primates, thank you so much. Find us on Instagram, Twitter, interact. It's been a lot of fun chatting with you guys, goofing around with those t-shirt designs and just talking about junk, whatever. Primus is on tour, of course. Refresh your mind on Green Naugahyde if you haven't, because we are plowing through this record for the next 8-9 weeks. Later days.
Willie Mays.